The whole gang is back together. Eric, after his 1 week vacation, is back for this week's episode. Gentlemen, 1 week in the books. Craig, KC, 1-0. Philadelphia, 1-0. Eric,
hey.
What the fuck happened with the Houston Texans?
We're a team.
You're giving the Pierre Dorian response to that, are you?
We are 0-0-1. We're on top of the AFC South.
I was going to say, there is not a single team in the AFC South that has a win right now, which is extra impressive because two of those teams played one another. So not every day that that result ends up happening. But thank you very much for eliminating me week one in the Survivor pool. This is why I should never trust the Indianapolis Colts ever again. So got that out of the way nice and early.
Kyle, keep my team's name out of your fucking mouth.
Well, they cut G.I. Jane. I mean, Rodrigo Blankenship today. So there you go.
Oh, my God. I mean, finally.
Finally.
I know that.
Well, gave him a whole 48 hours to stew over it, eh?
Well, I mean, it's not just from week one. I get that he's actually pretty accurate, but the guy has no leg. He hasn't even hit a 50-yard field goal in his career yet.
Yeah.
Rec specs.
Meanwhile, guys are lining up for 60.
Like, I get it. Like, I get that he's accurate, but, like, come on now.
Come on. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to introduce a segment this week known as Panic or Patience, because God knows, following week one, there are the most overreactions of the fantasy football and real life football talking head circuit of the entire year. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to throw out a name. We're going to round table it. You give me whether the owner of this particular person should have some patience and hold on to him and they'll turn it around, or they should start panicking a little bit here and maybe looking at some backup options, maybe starting to test the trade market, see if someone else will make a knee-jerk trade reaction, something like that. All right. So first up on our list, Devonta Smith of the Philadelphia Eagles, 4 targets, 0 catches, 0 points, while AJ Brown goes off for a career day. Patience or panic?
That one's, I want to say.
Okay. Patience. That's my answer. Patience.
I want to say patience. Brown was a monster. Like, yeah. he was feeling it. It could be one of those things where if Brown's going, they're just going to feed him the ball every time. He's not going to, what was it, like 15 targets? That's not going to be an everyday thing. So you have to think at some point they're going to get Devonta Smith the ball a bit more. And let's not forget that AJ Brown does have some injury history. Like, you'd hate to be that person where you drop Smith and then all of a sudden Brown goes down and boom, you just dropped Philly's number one receiver all of a sudden. So I would say patience, but concerning. Yeah. It is concerning. You'd think it'd be a little bit closer 50-50 split.
No, if it happens again, then maybe it's a bit more concerning. I think this one just might be, you know, even if Brown doesn't get injured, I think, you know, Smith's gonna, that offense is good. So he's going to have the ability to touch the ball. I would express some patience with him for sure. I don't think it's time to panic on Devonta Smith quite yet. I mean, the guy did come off, you know, he had almost 1,000 yards last year as a rookie and, you know, 5 touchdowns, which is pretty good, you know, with a quarterback who's developing himself. So I think it's a good time to exercise some patience with Devonta Smith.
I'm right there with you. This entire Smith-Brown combination really reminds me of DK and Tyler Lockett out in Seattle, when Russell Wilson was the quarterback here. Let's preface that. Where I think there are going to be games where DK just gets fed and AJ just gets fed. And it's going to be some of those boom-bust games where all of a sudden Tyler Lockett puts up 35 points. Next week, would anyone be surprised if Devonta Smith put up 150 yards and 2 touchdowns? Probably not, right? Very talented guy. Let's go out there and preach a little bit of patience, and Philly will spread the ball around a little bit more than they did week one versus the Lions. Next up, playing in a hurricane. Let's establish this. But Trey Lance of the San Francisco 49ers, 164 yards, 0 touchdowns, 1 interception through the air, 13 rushes and 54 yards in the swamp that was known as Soldier Field. Patience or panic?
I'm going to say patience, but with a bit more slack than some of the other guys on here. And the reason is, you know, patience for this season, because one game that he was playing in a hurricane is not a good, is not a good sample to draw from. And when I say a bit more slack, I'm pretty sure that was his, what, second game that he's ever started. I don't think, should a quarterback really be up for a panic in their first two games? Should they be even in their first season? I know lately guys like Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, and, you know, we have a recent few examples of rookies that have gone out and just put up crazy numbers that we've never seen before from rookies. So we now tend to try to expect more sooner from some of these guys. So I would say patience. And even if Trey Lance doesn't even improve too much, I mean, I'd like to see him play better, but even if he doesn't take a leap up to superstar status, I'd still exercise some patience, let the guy develop.
So I'll say yes too for patience, but more because of the weather. And I think you can do that for all 49ers players, like Samuel as well. I mean, he was good on the ground, but 2 catches on 8 targets. Brandon Ayuk only got targeted twice. So it's kind of, you're a little nervous from those receiving points anyways, like at least Samuel, now that Mitchell's out, he's probably going to be getting more rushes. But receiving wise, you just exercise some patience just because of the weather. That being said, they should expect more from Trey Lance. He's not a rookie. This is his, he sat for a year to learn the offense and get better. If we don't see some marked improvement from his passing game throughout the season, then I'm concerned.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I
get what you're saying earlier on, but they're giving him this offense.
Yeah. But so, if he has a blasé, like a very average year, nothing impressive, like give him another year to at least
develop. Well, they're going to have to. They're going to have to, because they're trying to move on. But for fantasy purposes,
We are a fantasy podcast. You're right.
I'm going to go ahead and hit the panic switch, mostly because I've been leading the anti-Trey Lance bandwagon for quite some time now. So I'm going to stay on brand here. Listen, there's the fact that it was horrible weather. No, not trying to brush that aside. But Justin Fields still performed, right? They're the same rookie class. It's not like Justin Fields was playing in sunshine and rainbows over there and Trey Lance was going over the snowy mountains and friggin' Lord of the Rings here. This literally was the worst nightmare for a lot of 49ers fans coming to life, because they wanted a strong first impression from Trey Lance, so that, you know what, let's put this quarterback controversy behind us here, let's make sure it's all Trey, let's do this. If they had traded Jimmy Garoppolo in the offseason, I wouldn't be worried. He's re-signed, he's an expensive backup, they've gone to the Super Bowl with him, they've gone to the NFC Championship with him. The NFC West is wide open this year because, you know, maybe it was a blip on the radar for the Rams. Maybe the Rams aren't as good as they were last year, right? So there's no clear-cut favorite for that division. The Seattle Seahawks are winning the NFC West right now, so it's wide open. This is a team who's got playoff aspirations. I think he's got a very short leash. So if you are not a Trey Lance truther, I would try flipping him right now before he has zero value and Jimmy G is running the show by midseason.
Yeah, and Justin Fields didn't have a great day either. He just had a better second half.
Mm-hmm.
Like he only threw the ball for 8 completions, Justin Fields, 8 for 17. Like it wasn't ridiculous, but it was just he made the big plays when it mattered.
Yeah.
And Trey Lance didn't. I think that's really what we were seeing throughout the game.
3 for 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. Like he made the big plays, and there was some collapses in the secondary for sure to allow that, but he at least found the guys. Where Lance was all over the place. And again, terrible weather, sure. But got to see more week 2. They're playing Seattle. Russell Wilson was able to move the ball okay. So it's not like Seattle's defense is impenetrable. So if they don't move, and that's a team that they should know pretty well being in the division. So if they can't move the ball against Seattle, full on panic.
Just don't run the ball at the 1-yard line against them.
Impenetrable 1-yard line goal line defense.
It's okay, that's just in Seattle. I think they're in San Fran next week.
All right, Eric, this is one right up your alley here based on your early selection of him. Damian Pierce, only 28% of snaps taken, 12 touches, Oat touched by Rex Burkhead, 19-12. Panic or patience?
In this case, patience. If this was, let's say, I know that his stock was rising closer to when the season started as far as his average draft position. If he was a guy who was, let's say, a seasoned veteran of 3 or 4 years and he had a history of an established role as a running back in the offense and we were expecting the same thing and then got 28% of the snaps, then I would panic. But he's a rookie. Let's not jump to conclusions. Let him, you know, make his way into the game plan as time goes on. I do think they will use him more and more. That is my opinion. So patience.
Yeah, I'll go patience too. I mean, Rex Burkhead is not going to be the number one running back for the entire year.
No.
He's just not. It's not him. He's an aging running back. There's no way they can roll with him and be comfortable about it. They let go of Marlon Mack because even though he was performing well in preseason because they saw something in Pierce, you just got to be patient with him. If unfortunately you were one of the people that, you know, reached for him and he's your second running back, that sucks. You might want to find someone else in the meantime until he gets more touches. If you drafted him as a little bit later, closer to his ADP and he's a flyer and you can just keep him on the bench patiently while you wait, yeah, keep him there. Don't drop him for some injury replacement. Because he's going to end up being better than who you get in the long run.
Well, I don't think it would have been an egregious pick to have him as your running back too.
No, I'm just saying it sucks because he's going to take a little while. That's all I'm saying, right? Like it's the same thing if you took Breece Hall a little earlier. It kind of sucks because it could be a little bit before it gets into starting. So you want a little bit more stability there in the meantime. But at the same time, don't drop him.
Yeah, but Lovie Smith came out and said that the plan was for him to get more carries. So I think if they eventually will.
Yeah, well, that's just it. We've seen this movie before with Rex Burkhead. You know what you're getting with him. Like Craig said, probably by week 4, I think that completely flips and it's probably Burkhead who's getting 28% of the snaps out there and Pierce is seeing, you know, 72. So I'm right there with you for patience on this one as well. All right. Irv Smith Jr., tight end for Minnesota. We talked about him on one of our earlier episodes. 2 targets, 0 catches, 0 points against Green Bay. And Kevin O'Connell then came out and said he wasn't involved in the offense by design. There will be some weeks where he will be heavily involved. There will be some weeks where he won't be. So there's that massive boom-bust potential there with our friend in Minnesota. Patience or panic?
I'm going to go ahead and say a little bit of both on this one. Patience because he will be involved at some point, but panic because when the hell do you decide to actually put him into your lineup? When do you feel comfortable doing that? You might as well go out and get a streaming tight end who will average 7 to 8 points for you per game rather than rolling the dice and seeing is this the week where he's going to get targets or is this a week where he's going to get zero? I find it bizarre saying that some weeks he's going to get, you know, he's going to get a lot of plays. Some weeks he's not. If he's a good tight end, why not just use him? If he starts performing well, isn't just the logical thing to use him as the tight end? I find that a very bizarre statement that he comes out and says, nine games of the season, he's going to get touches, 8 games he's not. Which ones those are going to be, I don't know. I know that those weren't his exact words, but it kind of implies like a little, there will be a little bit of this and a little bit of that. If he's good, just use him as a damn tight end every game.
Well, you can pretty much pencil in the next time they play Green Bay. That's probably a good sit week there based on his usage against them in week 1. But yeah, I'm going to say panic as well, too. Not in the sense that I would necessarily go out and drop him, but exactly like you said there, Eric, go out and grab another option on the waiver wire this week. And then see if he can start to string together a few more games of even just getting more involved in targets, right? Like, although he didn't catch anything, he only had 2 targets the whole game. And it wasn't exactly like Minnesota was struggling to move the ball there. They were going up and down the field. So, yeah, it was the Justin Jefferson show, but only 2 targets, no catches. That's a little bit of a rough look. So I would go out there, grab someone just as that insurance policy. And if we see more of this between, you know, now and week 5, maybe just go ahead and just drop Irv Smith Jr. outright until he can get his life figured out.
Yeah, I'm full on panic dropping him immediately. I'm not even going to bother holding him on to look for matchups unless there's really no one left.
Yeah, and if it's something
it doesn't make sense. Like, even if you're looking, like you're saying, for target wise, Phelan only had four targets. Who's more likely to get more targets the next game?
Yeah.
Or if Smith or Phelan, like, if they're not going to go to Jefferson. So, yeah, look for someone else.
All right. Let's go to the Dallas Cowboys. We're going to talk about CeeDee Lamb here, who no Dallas Cowboy really looked all that great against the Buccaneers, but CeeDee Lamb didn't have a great game. And now we're going to have the Cooper Rush show for, depending on whether you listen to the doctors, about 8 weeks, or Jerry Jones, who thinks it's going to be closer to 4 weeks. Regardless, we're not going to have Dak for the next little while here. So CeeDee Lamb, panic or patience?
That's a bit of a tough one, because if I say, you know, if I were to say panic, then I'd say, well, just sit him on your bench if you're really uncomfortable with him, and just ride it out until Dak comes back, and he should put up some serviceable numbers then. But then if I say patience, I'm like, well, he's going to have 8 weeks of Cooper Rush. Is he really going to be relevant for more than half of your season?
Well, I think, and again, you know, I've got some Dallas Cowboys bias here, but my move here would be not a full-blown panic, because I wouldn't drop him. That's ludicrous after 1 week here, especially where he's going in drafts here. But every league has a Dallas Cowboys fan in it. I'm quietly starting to float a couple of offers out there and seeing if they bite on it and aren't so worried about CeeDee Lamb. So it's not a full-blown panic fire sale here, but I'm starting to test the waters if I'm a CeeDee Lamb owner.
Yeah, that's pretty well where I'm thinking too. Like, don't drop, because it's still an asset that has some value, but on the inside, I'm freaking out. two catches on 11 targets.
Yeah.
Like, good, you got targeted a lot, but what is that catch percentage? That is awful. And I admittedly, I didn't watch this game too much. It was kind of a boring game, to be honest, and that was late at night. I'd be curious how many of the targets were on him. Like, was he able to get separation at all? Or was it more of like, where they tightened those and just couldn't separate? Or was it just terrible throws?
There were a couple bad throws, but for the most part, it was a separation issue. And,
right, and that's where I'm concerned.
And what concerns me too is, right, like, CeeDee Lamb was an Oklahoma Sooner in college, so I watched him a lot in college, and they used to line him out wide quite a bit, and he was a burner. He was going up and down the sidelines. Like, at the NFL level, he seems to just be trying to work across the middle way too much, and he can't get that separation where he doesn't have the ability to plant his foot and instantly juke a defender out of their shoes, and then now he's off to the races, right? He's just, there's always someone within tackling range of him, or able to get an arm on it or get their hands in there, disrupt that throw window a little bit. So yeah, it's interesting. I don't know what has happened since he got to Dallas, but that certainly wasn't the case when he was with Oklahoma.
No. And like, I don't know if it's part, a lot of times in the NFL, because of how physical it is, players will put on weight, and sometimes it's too much weight. And I don't know what his difference is now, but I wonder if maybe he put on extra weight just to deal with the rigors and the physicality and lost some speed in the process.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see, like, we mentioned Devonta Smith, like, he's a fast guy. He's small, but he's a fast guy.
Yeah.
I don't know if he wants to put on too much muscle, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it take away his main part of the game. And it's, yeah, if CeeDee Lamb can't get separation anymore, I don't know if he's dealing with an injury and they're just going through it or what, but it's not a good look. And if he can't get separation, you're relying on Cooper Kupp, Rush, who is not really going to be, let's say, the most accurate quarterback.
I would like to see Cooper Kupp in there at quarterback over Cooper Rush, frankly.
I kind of corrected midway and just sounded like Cooper Crush. Yeah, I don't know. I'm nervous. If you're a Dallas Cowboys fan, you're just nervous overall.
Yeah.
No. Like, regardless if Prescott's in there, they look bad.
I said at the beginning of the season, the easiest money you'll ever make is hammering the under on the Dallas win total this year, because I think that they're going to just completely come off the rails. Like, let's put it this way. What is more likely? They don't even have to make the playoffs, but they're just in the playoff hunt. Okay. They're in the playoff hunt at season's end, or Mike McCarthy gets fired by week 8, if you had to bet your life on it.
One or the other?
Yeah.
That's tough, because Jerry Jones is stupidly loyal. Like, how long did he have Garrett with him?
The clapper.
Yeah, right. Like this is
probably two seasons too long.
And this is McCarthy's third year.
Oh, it just feels like he's been with them for an eon at this point there, but
I think it's like his third year. I'd say McCarthy getting fired. A lot of the blame goes to management for paying certain players and letting other players go. And
oh, you mean owner, yeah. President, GM, Jerry
yeah,
Jones?
Yeah, he's not going to get fired, but I mean, that's you built the team, you got the coaches, you brought the players in, they're not performing. Mm-hmm. Oh, it must be someone else's fault.
Mm-hmm. Eric, fired or playoffs?
Fired, baby.
Emphatically. Emphatically.
With conviction.
There you go. All right, cruising right along here. Debo Samuel had an interesting role in week one because Elijah Mitchell obviously gets injured and Debo kind of turned into a de facto running back for that swamp fest there in Chicago. Now, this is something, there's two storylines to keep in mind here, right? Number one, there's the fact that Debo in the offseason was saying he's not exactly thrilled with the running back slash wide receiver. He wants to be more of a pass catcher. And he only was targeted a handful of times in that game. Only two catches as well, too.
Two catches, eight targets.
Well, there's speaking to good old Trey Lance's accuracy.
Yeah.
But there's that. And then there's also the fact that Brandon Ayuk was everyone's fantasy darling heading into this season. And, you know, depending on how much of that Kool-Aid you were drinking, you're either going to be sorely disappointed or you were going to be right all along. Where are you falling on that spectrum of panic with Debo as far as his ability to replicate what he did last year, or patience and Trey Lance will figure it out and start feeding him the ball a little bit more through the air?
That's patience. I mean, he didn't look, no one really looked great receiving. We kind of touched on it a bit with Trey Lance, just how inaccurate he was that day passing the ball, and maybe some of that's weather. But I'd be a little bit concerned just because, again, it's the same kind of thing. Like, where's the accuracy? And I know it was slippery, but Fields made his passes when he had to, and he was under a lot more pressure than Lance was. Mm-hmm. And again, like, I guess he's going to just rush the ball more. He's just going to be that type of player. That's all I can think of. I know he doesn't want to do that as much, but now that he signed the contract, I feel like he maybe doesn't care as much. I don't think he'll do what he did last year. Last year, he was unreal receiving as well. Mm-hmm. Patience still, though. We need to see more of one more clean weather game from Lance, at least to see what he has. But patience. Because even then, maybe Garoppolo will come back in and then it's the old Debo again. So
patience. He's such a dynamic player. He didn't even have a terrible game when it comes, you know, to fantasy because he did salvage a day with a touchdown. So I am not too worried he'll be used. He'll put up good numbers. Ho-hum. Yada, yada. Yeah. Life goes on.
Yeah, I think the biggest concern was just that he was so dominant last year.
Yeah, whereas, but you almost like, got
he had, he had a good.
Yeah, he's going to have a bit of a regression, though.
Yeah,
well, you bring up a good point here, Craig, right? Because my answer is the same. Patience, you're not going to do anything crazy with him. It was week one. He salvaged the day with the touchdown. Still a dynamic player. But let's walk this through. Let's assume Trey Lance is your quarterback the entire season. Okay. And however you think of Trey Lance, that's your ceiling for him right there. If someone offered you after week one, AJ Brown or for Debo Samuel, straight up, who do you think has the better season? Knee jerk reaction after 1 week here.
Oh, after 1 week, knee jerk Brown.
AJ Brown. That, and because his offense will probably be a bit more potent with the pieces around him than Debo Samuel's will be with the pieces around him.
So if someone offers you Debo for AJ, straight up, you're taking AJ, both of
yeah.
you. Yeah,
I wow. think so. It's the quarterback and the offensive concern.
Wow, there you go. All right, moving on. Wide receiver for the Cincinnati Bengals didn't have a great day because he got a concussion midway through the game. However, that being said, even when he was in the game, wasn't quite as involved as fantasy owners probably would have liked. So T. Higgins for the Cincinnati Bengals. Panic or patience? Considering as well, too, how high he was going in drafts coming into this year.
Patience, patience, patience. He played, what, less than one half? And in that half, Joe Burrow was handing the ball over to the other team. So,
yeah, he was.
Patience.
Yeah, patience for me too. That was a wild game. I didn't like it's a good thing Cincinnati fixed that O-line in the offseason. Tell you what.
Spent all that money just to get sacked seven more times.
I don't know if it's just miscommunications or Burrow's just hanging on to that ball way too damn long, but still patience. Hopefully he
Yeah.
comes back. He got rocked in that last play. Hopefully he comes back good. In the
Yeah.
meantime, I mean, yeah, what can you do other than hold on to him? You're
No.
not gonna be able to trade an injured player.
No. Well, you never know, right? Like, again, I wasn't buying the ADP of where Higgins was going. It's going to be the Ja'Marr
Market.
Chase show out there. And I think Joe Mixon is going to factor in hugely as well this year in a way that we haven't even seen him do over the course of his career if he could stay healthy. So I don't know. It's obviously not a drop. It's maybe try and trade him. But if anything, I was just steering clear of him pre-draft and not too much that I saw in that first game. Granted, it wasn't a great first half for Joe Burrow, but those things didn't exactly reinforce a whole lot of confidence for those that were drafting T. Higgins as, you know, a top 10 wide receiver coming off the board. Speaking of going in opposite directions of top 10 wide receivers, let's go and talk about our friend Cam Akers and the absolute dud he put up against the Buffalo Bills. Three rushes for 0 yards, zero targets, 0 points. A whole lot of zeros across the board. And Darrell
Panic,
Henderson.
panic, panic,
Oh,
panic, panic,
not
panic,
even
panic.
done the intro here. Eric is already panicking. All right, give us your panic spiel.
Before he touched the ball, it worried me seeing Darrell Henderson on the first two drives there, because it leads me to believe that they like Darrell Henderson more when it came to practice and training camp and what they saw, and they didn't like what they saw on Cam Akers. And granted, they probably gave Cam Akers a decent leash to show what he could do. And the fact that they, seemingly gave way more confidence to Darrell Henderson during the game was concerning. I get that they were down to the Bills and they had to throw the ball a lot, but in just that small sample size of his three rushes, he looked like a pig trying to run through mud. He was slow, indecisive, and reminded me a lot of Trent Richardson. I didn't like it.
Ooh.
I'm panicking.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm hitting the panic switch as hard as I possibly can. It's not looking great. You know, McVay had said preseason, they were kind of looking at a 1A, 1B, even split between the touches. That got thrown out the window by what, the second quarter? And it was pretty obvious to anyone who was watching that game that they are much more comfortable with Henderson on the field. The one saving grace that you can say is neither one of them ran it particularly well because they were just getting obliterated at the line of scrimmage there. That Buffalo Bills defense is no joke this season. So, will there be bounce back games? Yeah. Will he be going as number 59 overall, which is what his preseason ADP was? I don't think so. I think it's a tough ask for him to live up to that. So if you're going to try and trade him for anything, do it now because I have a feeling 3, 4 weeks from now, you'll be getting 20 cents on the dollar.
This is McVay after the game on Friday. Akers needs to play with an increased level of urgency. There were some instances where there were some positive things and some things that he can do better, but we want to see an increased level of urgency and accountability snap in and snap out from him.
Coaches
So,
usually try to keep things pretty
yeah.
diplomatic when they say stuff.
That's
That
why I'm.
that concerns me.
There
Yeah,
was a
pretty
exactly.
big missed block that led to Stafford getting annihilated in the backfield there on one of the sacks as well, too, which is pretty easy to find if you just, you know, Google in Cam Akers missed block.
Well,
And
why speculate?
yeah. And I think his night was essentially done after that. So I don't think he saw any more touches following that missed assignment. So it's not just a, hey, he was an ineffective runner, but he wasn't picking up blitzes like he was supposed to as well too, and that probably put him in McVay's doghouse. So I think week two you're going to see a heavy dose of Henderson, and Akers will be oh so lucky to even see a couple of touches based on his week one performance.
Yeah. And what has to be a concern too I don't know. Maybe the Achilles injury is the new knee injury where it's just so much tougher to come back from. But we've seen it time and time again. Achilles injuries, players do not get that explosiveness back right away.
No.
Like the knees, it's more of a mental, do I trust my knee enough versus how much strength and explosiveness there is there. The Achilles injury seems to be one that could be longer lasting, just recovery wise. I mean, we've seen it here in Ottawa alone, right? We watched Erik Karlsson play for years. He has a couple Achilles injuries and suddenly he's lost that burst. I think there's a lot to worry about. That's a reason why I didn't want to draft him in general to start, just that recovery from Achilles. He came back quickly last year, didn't look great in the playoffs, and was still nursing some injuries in the offseason. I'm full on panicking.
All right. Last but not least on our panic or patience panel here, we've got Hunter Renfrow, Las Vegas Raiders. Went out, had six targets, three catches, 21 yards, 4.6 points if you're in a half point PPR. Obviously not the greatest performance that you wanted out of probably, your wide receiver two, wide receiver three, maybe your flex, depending on how big your league is, but was this just a case of, hey, the LA Chargers defense is actually legitimate? Or do you think with Devontae Adams and his 40 fucking targets that he got that game, that Renfrow is actually going to be the one getting the short end of the stick when it comes to looks in games?
Patience, because I don't think there's really any reason to panic because we were expecting his role to be diminished. Certainly, probably expected him to produce a bit more, but he's a good safety valve for Derek Carr. I think he'll continue to be used that way and get a lot of these short passes. And I don't think it's the cause for concern. We knew what. We knew that he was going to probably have a diminished role compared to last year. So it's not like we had high expectations and we're like, oh shit, what's going on? But I think the balance will shift away from 17 target. What, 17 targets Devontae Adams had, something like that, to something a bit more smoothed out over, Hunter Renfrow and Darren Waller getting a piece of that.
So Waller and Renfrew both had six targets each. I can kind of see that being the average for them throughout the year. And that's why, and the only reason is just, I mean, we saw it for years with Adams when he was in Green Bay, is the dude just commands a ton of targets because he's your best player and he's probably always open. So that's always going to be your first look. And if he's always open, Carr's just going to throw the ball. So it's going to be one of those things where, yeah, Waller and Renfrew might only get around 6 to 7 targets a game. How confident are you that Renfrow will be able to turn those into points? I think Waller has a better chance just because of his size and being a red zone threat than Renfrow. So I'm low-key panicking if I picked Renfrow.
If you're in a full PPR league, it's a decent floor because it's not like those, let's say I grant you the premise and he gets his 6 or 7 targets. You're probably talking about high probability catches. He's not catching the ball super far downfield, but he's a guy who they use a lot in, like Julian Edelman was used in New England close to the goal line if they're passing, for these like quick routes to, I mean, I wouldn't maybe want Hunter Renfrow as more than anything of a flex or a wide receiver two or three during a bye week or injury fill-in. But we all expected he was gonna do a bit less this year, I think.
We did, but it's like you're saying, if he averages six targets, say he catches four of those, and you're saying short routes, so what, you're getting a guy and playing him for four catches for 40 yards? You know what I mean? Like that's not what he was doing last year. So if you're thinking he's
Of
gonna,
course.
that's just what I'm saying. Like as far as fantasy points on a week-to-week basis, I'm concerned.
I'm gonna say patience here. I think, will he get back to last year where he's gonna be seeing multiple games where he's getting 11, 12, 13 looks? No, I don't think that's gonna be happening. I'm there with you. 6 to 8 targets kind of a per game. If you're relying on him to win you weeks, week in, week out,
No,
you might
you
be,
shouldn't be.
in trouble this season, or you'll be vying for the Sacco in your league. But is he a good wide receiver three or a flex option in a deeper league? Absolutely. I think he'll still have his moments. He was never really, this touchdown dependent guy. It was sort of a volume thing, so that is a little bit concerning there. It's going to take a bit of a hit, but I still think it's going to be Waller that ultimately takes the hit in terms of targets. I think Waller ends up becoming more of that inside the 20. That's when we start looking Darren Waller's way. Whereas if it's a game where they're going up and down the field and, you know, it's a high scoring affair, I see Renfrow still having some roles to play. And in that AFC West, I think there's going to be a lot of high scoring games. So I'm not panicking quite yet.
Yeah, me neither, because there's nothing, we're not concerned about Hunter Renfrow being a good player. He's a good player. It's really strictly volume. Like we're not, you know, it's a stark contrast from Cam Akers, where we can go to the TV and go, whoa, you suck. You know, like it's not quite the case with Hunter Renfrow.
I think Renfrow's just going to be one of those better in real life football than fantasy this year.
All right. So we got two segments left here. So we've got our keep an eye on and our pickup of the week. So our pickup of the week is obviously who we think you should go out there and grab. We try and stay away from the chalk as far as, you know, oh, if you're in an 8-person league, you know, this person might be available. But if you're in anything over a 10 or a 12 person league, they've got drafted type thing. And then for the keep an eye on, the premise of that segment is essentially someone who maybe not rush out and spend your free agent budget on quite yet, but let's see how this situation develops through week 2, 3, et cetera. And then maybe click that little watch button next to their name so that you can see how they perform over the next couple of weeks. So let's start with to keep an eye on, and to get things kicked off here, someone who I thought I would never talk about for fantasy purposes ever again, I'm going to say Taysom Hill. For the simple reason that for Yahoo leagues, at least, he has a tight end designation. So great for bye weeks, great for even just watching how Dennis Allen factors him in. One, 4 rushes, 81 yards and a TD versus Atlanta. I genuinely thought that he was just a Sean Payton, you know, gadget toy thing, and we would never be talking about him again unless Jameis got hurt. And oh, here comes Taysom and the revolving door of quarterbacks down in New Orleans. But it looks like Dennis Allen is actually going to trot him out there a little bit. And yeah, he didn't throw the ball, but who knows? Maybe he will from time to time. So you can look at getting passing stats. You can get looking passing TDs. You can look at getting rushing yards. So he's an intriguing one. I'm not sold on going out there and, you know, buying him right away. Maybe it was a week one blip against a pretty crappy Atlanta defense. But I'm clicking the little watch button next to his name and seeing how that plays out to buy you.
Just to clarify, we're keeping an eye on these players, right?
Correct.
Okay, perfect. So the one I would keep an eye on, and maybe not necessarily recommend you go for a watch, but still go ahead and pick them up. But don't, you know, especially if you're using a waiver wire budget, put in a $0 or $1 offer for him, is Khalil Herbert. He looked good, way better than David Montgomery. And yes, he was, you know, out snapped and out touched by David Montgomery quite a bit, but he played very well with the opportunities that he got, and David Montgomery did not. So you know, is there going to be an argument made that there's going to be a committee between both of them? Are they going to maybe give Khalil Herbert a bit of a chance? Certainly if David Montgomery gets injured, you know, I think he's one of the better trusted backups in the league to put up a serviceable fantasy number. Even you know, at worst, you pick him up and you get rid of a guy that you don't want on your bench anymore, and you know he sits there, no harm, because he's not in your starting lineup. At best, he could be a very serviceable fantasy option for bye weeks plus injuries, because injuries happen. Even if you already have a backup running back so that you can plug in on your bench, still go in and pick him up. There is nothing wrong with double bagging when it comes to running backs on your bench.
I love it. I've already got Khalil Herbert on my bench right now, so I'm hoping that he breaks out there. He's one of my double baggers, as you call him there.
But. Yeah. So full disclosure, he's not one of these guys that's available universally, but in Yahoo's, he's still available in about 60% of leagues. So if you're listening, the odds are you probably are more likely that he's available. So pick him up.
All right. I've got two. So I'll start with the more obvious one, and it's kind of falls in the same range as Herbert. He's available, or he's taken in 31% of leagues, mostly riding the bench right now, I'd assume. Isaiah Pacheco for the Chiefs. So we saw some good things from the Chiefs offense, including Allaire. He looked pretty good. In the fourth quarter, the starters, for the most part, sat, and it was the backups playing. Well, in that one quarter, Pacheco put up 66 yards rushing and caught a 10-yard pass. And the dude looked explosive. He broke off for another 22-yard run. The guy's just a violent runner. Got his first touchdown. I still think he's a guy that's going to, at some point, when Allaire maybe falters a bit or gets injured, he's going to be the next guy. McKinnon is going to get his touches too, but Pacheco is going to be more and more involved as this goes. And if there's an injury, like, he's right up to the top, and he may just at some point get more touches during the start of the game as the season goes. I think that's a position value you need to keep an eye on each week and see what happens. The other one is a little bit more.
The Homer pick. The Homer pick.
100% Homer.
And you even own him on your team too here. You're selling.
I do.
This is a conflict of interest here.
I felt like Eric's
giving you a virtual thumbs down right now.
I felt like I had to mention him because I guess if anyone was watching cable, they don't have Red Zone, or they're just watching the Red Zone feed instead of the actual game, they likely miss it because it was such a blowout. And if you're watching cable, there was an overtime game before, so you missed most of the first quarter anyways. And then they went to the Chargers and Raiders game because it was a blowout. They wanted to go to a more competitive game, so you didn't even see Pacheco play. So that's where I kind of felt like I had to let them know how he actually did, and he's worth rostering, or at least keeping an eye on, seeing how it goes.
Yes, Eric, we see you've got your hand up over there. You've got something to add.
Craig, isn't it true that you stand to gain tremendously from your fantasy football team and your own personal team from him doing better?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the term have you ever heard of the term conflict of interest?
Why? I'm not the one that's putting him into the actual game. There's no conflict of interest.
Well, we're a podcast, and we're
what's the conflict of interest?
Andy Reid listens to us.
I only have him in one of my leagues. I don't have him in both.
I'm right. Just breaking right. Your balls.
Just double bagging you, Craig.
Anyways, the other one that he is most definitely available in, only taken in 4% leagues, the San Francisco 49ers new practice squad signing at running back Marlon Mack. We already know what's going on with that, how awful that running back curse is. You never know who's going to end up being the leading rusher. If they struggle again in week two, he might get promoted if he had by week three. And I think that's just one of those rooms that you should keep an eye on, because Marlon Mack, he's looked good when he's been given a chance, but circumstances, like, you're behind Jonathan Taylor. I'm sorry, you're not going to get touches there. And then he gets dropped, and the Houston Texans like enough what they saw to their rookie that they felt they were okay to drop him as well. It's not like he wasn't producing for them or didn't have a bad camp.
Yeah, so but
it, Jeff it could Wilson... be one of those things. What's that?
Jeff Wilson Jr. has proven to be a pretty
I understand that, but they signed him. They signed him for a reason. I'm just saying, keep an eye on the running back.
To have their number one, their first team offense, friggin' run him over on the when he's on the practice squad.
I don't think that's how practice squads work.
Why would the offense be running him over? Wouldn't it be
the defense? The first team defense. Wow.
They play the second team. He's a practice squad signing right now.
What a terrible take by me. Stick and move. Stick and move, guys. Stick and move.
No, I'm just saying. We're not saying, like, this
yeah,
is not
Craig,
the
Yeah, Craig, I fucked up the take. Yeah, let's just
this
not
isn't
rub
the run out
in,
and
right?
Pick him up immediately. This is keep an eye on
all
him.
Right.
You should keep an eye on what happens with the 49ers.
You were kind of sending out some pick him up immediately vibes, though, Craig.
I was not.
Well, Eric was picking up on something.
I think I was starting with saying, run that back out. I was saying.
All I'm saying, Craig, is Jeff Wilson Jr. will probably get the majority of the touches.
Huh. Is he injury prone? I can't remember. Keep an eye on it. They signed him for a reason. They're obviously concerned about the running back depth, and he's produced in the NFL before. Keep
an eye. If I'm wrong and Marlon Mack becomes the number one, even the number 1A running back in this committee, I'll do the hot wings gauntlet.
Why? That's not a punishment for you. You probably had the hot wings challenge before you went on here tonight.
Yeah, we'll choose a punishment fitting to the crime there.
I will eat delicious hot wings as punishment.
Yeah.
using hot sauce that I eat almost daily.
Oh. All right, moving along. Final segment of the night. Who is your pickup of the week, Eric?
My pickup of the week is Curtis Samuel. Listen, his last 2 years in Carolina were really good. He was just he had an injury riddled season last year where he didn't put up really any numbers at all. Clearly, he's developed good chemistry with Carson Wentz. I don't think he's going to put up 20 points every week, but if you're someone who, you know, like me, who sometimes you struggle with depth at wide receiver and you kind of look at your wide receiver three and your flex and go, man, I could use someone really better, but there isn't anyone better on your bench. I think Curtis Samuel's a decent pickup. I mean, he looked good. That offense looked decent. And yeah, I don't think it's an overreaction to think that he can have a decent floor for you and for your fantasy team each week.
All right. My pickup, I knew that was going to be the obvious one. I was trying to stay away from that. It's a good pick, though. It's a good pick, Eric. It's a good pick. It's just, it's too obvious. What was the open mouth for?
Mockery. Right.
My pick for this week, at least, Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Whoa.
Yes. So here's the reasoning.
All so right, Cooper, tell us your
Cooper,
reasoning.
Cooper struggled week one. Two yes. catches, six targets. Not a great week. Brissett was having problems finding
wow.
him.
Wow. How did we not go to him for our panic or patience? That would have been another good one. But
I think it's because we kind of saw it coming.
Coming. We saw it coming.
Big risk on my part to actually draft him. Bad on me. just because of the quarterback situation. But if Cooper is going to be the guy that's getting shadowed all the time, it seems like Brissett had a bit more chemistry with Peoples-Jones, who saw 11 targets and caught 9. They're playing the Jets week 2. I think they're going to have Sauce Gardner probably just shadow Cooper the entire time, and he could have a tough time. That guy is legit. So I can see, once again, Peoples-Jones getting a lot of targets. And this is a Jets defense that had a couple massive breakdowns and left two wide receivers, Bateman and Duvernay, wide open for big touchdowns. I think there's a chance there for Peoples-Jones to score a big one, and he'll like to get more targets.
So you heard it here first, everybody. Should 7 things fall into place, Donovan Peoples-Jones could have a good day.
So 6 of 11 targets. I said 9. It's 6. I read it upside down.
You are in a cryptocurrency bear market trying to shill an altcoin right now. That's what you're doing.
I knew what half of those words meant.
Yes. All right.
What? I could explain it a bit slower. You're not a big finance guy.
I am not. Could you please explain it slower with graphs if possible?
All right. Be right back.
All right. I'm going pretty off the board here. Only 1% owned, but that should change this week with Keenan Allen likely being out in Los Angeles here. Short
Wait,
week.
Here you go. Here you go, Craig. I got the graphic ready.
I see it goes down.
I'm going to go with DeAndre Carter, wide receiver for the Los Angeles Chargers, 1% owned. Like we said, Keenan Allen likely out Thursday night, short week. 3 receptions on 4 targets for 64 yards and a TD last week versus Vegas, and that was with a full squad out there. So, number one target, well, 1A, 1B, depending on who you like more, Keenan or Mike Williams. But with that person being sidelined, that's a lot of targets that are going to open up. They are going to probably be in another shootout yet again. They're going to be airing it out quite a bit. Justin Herbert has shown that he's got a great arm. He likes to spread it around. There's going to be some looks available. Go out there and grab DeAndre Carter as my pickup of the week.
It's a big game. That's a big game Thursday night.
We all know the Chiefs got this, Craig. Did you see them? Did you see them on Sunday? They're going 17-0. What could possibly go wrong?
Probably more injuries.
Yeah, as long as the field is properly sodded and taken care of, as per Andy Reid's comments. Andy Reid blamed the turf for Butker. For all their injuries, actually.
Right, I can see that. Well, don't they grow it away from the stadium and then wheel it in Arizona? Because it's too damn hot to grow anything properly.
Mm-hmm. Let's get the exact quote here.
By the way, kicking in that game, speaking of, holy crap, Justin Reid. There's a guy that doesn't kick it out of bounds on the kickoff.
Yeah.
Gonna get signed by the Colts.
All right. Andy Reid's quote was, it was a little loose. That's what happens sometimes when you re-sod. It's part of the Butker injury and the McDuffie injury, and that's unfortunate. The turf picked up, and I'll tell you that it did have something to do with it. If it didn't, I'd tell you that too. It's not an excuse by any means, but you can all see it when you watch the tape, end quote.
Yep, I believe it. It sucks. I mean, like I said, more injuries, but...
Listen, Andy Reid knows his grass. He loves his grass-fed, grain-raised beef, so
he can tell when something's
telling the truth here.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like for him to say that's not an excuse. I don't think anyone's ever blaming. Like sometimes injuries just happen, right? But when it's like you see your kicker slipping on kickoff with his plant foot, and then I didn't see exactly what happened, so I'll trust him that maybe McDuffie slipped and ripped a groin or a hamstring. Sorry, whenever. He fell trying to recover there. Like it's 100% possible.
Well, that brings an end to the latest episode of the Dynasty League podcast here, brought to you by SeatGeek.com, where if you head over there and use the promo code Eric,
you'll get $20 off.
Yes, if you use the promo code DynSports, you will. That's DYNES sports with an S at the end of it. No space in between. You guys are 0-for-2 on promo codes.
Don't put the space.
Unbelievable.
I was put on the spot. I was not prepared.
Wow. Dine sports at SeatGeek.com. Go out there, grab tickets to the next sporting event, concert, live event, whatever tickles your pickle. Until then, we'll see you guys later.
Hold on. Forgot to do the cornerstone segment of this podcast, which is the Anvil Award. What the hell? It was a weekly staple.
Whoa, that is a good point.
Yeah, and because you brought it up, you've clearly got someone in mind here, Eric.
Yes, I do. Son of a bitch, OJ Howard from the Houston Texans.
You may have heard of him, but not in a while.
scoring 2 touchdowns on my beloved Colts. He did most of the damage to us. Infuriating, but kind of tip my cap to him for the good week. Rostered in only less than 0.5% of leagues. Good job, OJ Howard.
Good job to that 0.5.
God damn it, OJ Howard. Ugh.